Hi, I'm Madonna from New Leaf Natural Therapies. My email and website aren't working at the moment, so sorry about that. Oh my goodness, anyway, shenanigans. I listened to this interview a couple of times with Dr. John Campbell, and it's an amazing interview. If you're worried about your brain, if you're worried about how food is affecting us, if you're worried about the ways that we can prevent dementia, this one's for you. Enjoy.
Welcome to this talk, and I'm very pleased today to welcome Patrick Holford, who is the chief executive and I think probably founder and chief scientist of Food for the Brain. Patrick, welcome, and do correct me on anything I've got wrong.
No, you're on the money so far. Thank you. Thank you
Great.
for having me.
Yeah, that's a pleasure. We've had some preliminary chats, and I'm just there's some this is really good stuff. Listen to this video. It's going to be really interesting, I'm sure. Now, dementia is feared by many people. I mean, I've recently looked after my own father who died with dementia. There's probably not a person watching this video who hasn't had a family member or a close friend that they've seen with dementia. And there's a lot of fear around dementia. But the consensus now that you're putting forward, and by the way, congratulations on reaching the front page of Caduceus. Which is where I got some of these initial thinking from. Depression and dementia and the links between these is very interesting. But if we start off with dementia and nutrition, and you're bringing together a lot of synthesis on this, Patrick,
Yeah, I mean, I think the
so
first
very
thing to
interesting.
absolutely understand, and there's no controversy about it, it's just true, is that two-thirds of dementia is Alzheimer's, which is a shrinking of a central part of the brain. And this is not a natural part of the aging process. This does not need to occur. In just the same way that the average woman in the EU will spend 14 years unable to climb 10 steps, that's the statistic. That's not a natural part of the aging process. That is due to a lack of exercise, and our brain is the same. We are the architects of our brain's future health. You do not need to get Alzheimer's. There are less than 1% of cases caused by causative genes, and if you have those, things will happen. But for 99% of us, Alzheimer's is preventable. Dementia is preventable. And in relation to nutrition, as with so many diseases, there are, in essence, four what I call the horsemen of the mental health apocalypse. One is sugar, the other is brain fat, so we can dig into each of these. The third is to do with B vitamins, especially B12, very important. And the fourth are antioxidants, and that's both smoking and pollution on the bad side, and fruit and veg, vitamin C, etc., on the good side. And those are the four biological drivers of the breakdown in brain function that ultimately leads to dementia.
So we're really talking about a disease of Western, hesitate to use the term, civilization. The fact that we've got all these ultra-processed foods readily available.
Largely, but also it's not just that. I mean, for example, if you look at WHO data on fish consumption, you can actually predict a country's rate of depression, suicide, and dementia based on its seafood consumption. So, never mind Western civilization, people who lived sort of in the middle of India and had no access to fish, and maybe their religion was such that they would never eat it. They do actually have more brain degeneration. And by the way, the brain, I was talking to the wonderful Professor Michael Crawford. Now, this is something fundamental because in the 70s, he analyzed the fatty acids in different animals and their organs, liver, heart, brain, etc. And they vary in the liver massively depending on what they eat, except in the brain of every single animal. There are two fatty acids. One is omega-3 DHA, which is a marine food. And the other is omega-6 arachidonic acid, which comes ultimately from plants. There is not a single brain, from a mouse to an elephant to a dolphin to a human to a lion to a tiger to a cat to a dog, that is not those two fatty acids. In other words, what he discovered was that the process of the development of the brain, which originally happened in the ocean, requires these two fundamental pieces. They got to be there. You cannot have brains, neurons, etc., without, which is really quite extraordinary. And all that varies is the size of the brain. So yes, what we're seeing now, this massive increase in dementia and Alzheimer's, is a function of modern living, too much sugar, not eating fruit and veg. And I mean, the terrible truth, when I was growing up, everyone had fish on Friday. You had fish on Friday at school, you had fish on Friday. And of course, for our parents, I mean, a little bit before it was cod liver oil, you know, at school, everyone had that. Nowadays, there are many kids, many, many kids who have no fish, no omega-3, have no control of their emotional, you can't control emotions if you have no omega-3. So these kids who are flying off the handle, having massive hissy fits, are often, it's a function of lack of omega-3. And now what we've learned, and it's not really surprising since the brain is 60% fat when you take out the water, that having a lack of omega-3 predicts your risk for dementia. I mean, actually the omega-3 index, which is a measure we do from blood of EPA and DHA, which are the really important omega-3s that you get in fish, percentage of them in your red blood cell membrane. It's not floating around, but actually bound into the membrane, which is what we need. That will predict how big your brain is. I mean, the density of the brain, it literally predicts the density of your brain plus your cognitive powers and your future risk of getting dementia. I mean, it's that linear.
Patrick, I'm mid 60s now. Is it too late for me to change?
No, not at all. We just had a man, actually, I mean, it's a tragic story, but this is what we want to avoid. And his wife, Dorothy, kept finding him, his name is Alan, or nickname Nodge, in different rooms at night because he couldn't find the loo in his own home. He was a computer programmer. He couldn't turn his computer on or off. He couldn't conceive of tomorrow. He was a gardener. He couldn't begin to plant his garden. Anyway, he was diagnosed with mixed dementia, which, by the way, is nearly always Alzheimer's, which is 62% of dementia, and vascular, which is 17% of dementia, so poor supply of nutrients to the brain, oxygen and so on. And, you know, she said, what do we do? And they said nothing. And he went on to our website, foodforthebrain.org, did the free test, which also then has a questionnaire which works out what your risk is. And then his wife, you know, supported him in making all the changes, like going to bed an hour earlier, sleep is important. He started to take omega-3 fish oils plus a B vitamin supplement. He cut out the sugar. He actually went ketogenic because you can, the brain cells can run on ketones made from fat 5 days a week. Various other things. He's joined a Morris dancing group. I'm not entirely sure if that's good for you or not. But he's literally doubled his cognitive function score, which was in the dementia zone, and reduced his risk, his future risk. If you're doing everything wrong on our questionnaire, you score 100%. If you're doing everything right, you score 0%. You want to get below 30%. He was up in the top 50s. He's now in the low 30s. He has planted his entire spring garden. He's back on the computer doing emails. And this is a man with diagnosed mixed dementia. So no, there's hope for you yet, John.
Good. Thank you. I'm very pleased to hear it. Let's carry on with the fats bit a bit if we can, Patrick. After our conversation, I went to a local supermarket. Other supermarkets are available. I have no interest in this.
Yes.
Mackerel, is that going to be quite useful for me?
It's absolutely excellent. We say smash it. S for salmon, M for mackerel, A for anchovies, S for sardines, and H for herring or kipper. So, and I don't know, the story for how we discovered all this is quite interesting, because on the one hand, we had Michael Crawford. On the other hand, we had Professor Hugh Sinclair. And Professor Hugh Sinclair noticed something quite interesting, because basically for every disease that exists, there's a country that doesn't have it. And the Inuit don't have heart disease. So he went and lived with the Inuit, and he thought it was their diet. So he shipped their diet of seal meat back to Cambridge University, where he ate literally exactly what they ate, seal meat. And he proved that omega-3 was the active ingredient that was good for his heart. And now we know it's good for the brain. And what he basically worked out was the cold water plankton has the basic omega-3, which you also get in chia seeds, walnuts, and other such things, which is good. The little fish eat that. And then the fish with teeth, like the mackerel, eat the little fish, and then the seals eat the fish with teeth. And this is how we learn. If you want to have a healthy heart and a healthy brain, you eat Eskimos.
Indeed. Yeah, that was a joke, by the way.
Yes.
But seals would be a reasonable thing to eat, but we won't have...
It is. Seal oil is the highest.
Seal oil.
Seal oil is the highest source. And caviar is actually even better than seal oil. So
I'll be okay then. That's fine.
You'd be fine. Just have caviar.
Yeah.
But you know,
I've never even tasted it, but yeah. Okay.
Mackerel is good. Mackerel is re- we make a kedgeree, you know, with mackerel. I mean, there's several things you can do, and there's a sardine pate. My book is full of, you know, very, very simple things that you can do with fish.
Am I right in thinking it's not the fish that synthesize the useful omega-3s, it's the marine phytoplankton. And then it just concentrates up the food chain. Is
Yeah,
that correct?
that's absolutely true. And I'll tell you something really extraordinary, if you think about it. Now that we know that every single brain of every single animal is omega-3 DHA, and there's something special about DHA, it's actually, it converts solar photons into electricity. And that was 1 billion years ago, some little organism, we think the dinoflagellate, effectively incorporated this fat, got an electric shock, and it was the sort of twitch towards food. And it was the beginning of the whole process of that. It was quite extraordinary. And I remember, and the dinoflagellate is a little bit like an eye cell. I remember asking Michael Crawford, is the eye an extension of the brain? And he said, no, the brain is an extension of the eye. Because the eye is absolutely, totally drenched in DHA, omega-3, and vitamin A. And at the age of 94 next month, he's worked out something no one ever knew, which is how the energy that hits your eye, the photons, turns into the image that you are seeing accurately in color. And it requires quantum physics and a lot of DHA. So DHA is not like a sideline. Every single thought, feeling, vision, hearing is going through this network of DHA. It's so key. So one of the questions that came up, you may or may not know that the dolphin was the last animal to leave the land, so to fully commit to the sea. It has every single bone we have in our hands and arms in its flippers. And in fetal evolution, it's got legs and arms. And so it decided to leave the land completely, as did whales and so on. So one of the questions was, well, now they're all in the sea. Has that brain ratio, omega-3, omega-6, changed? Omega-3 marine foods, omega-6 plant foods? And the answer is it hasn't. And what we've learned is the migratory routes of whales, for example, are exactly to go to the hot waters where the algae and the plankton have omega-6, and back to the cold waters where the algae and plankton have omega-3. That's how it works. It's extraordinary.
Amazing. Totally amazing. Now, vegetarians watching, what's the advice? I mean, can we? I think you can get preparations now where there is the marine phytoplanktons, the oils extracted directly from the vegetarian sources. Are they available?
Now, what's happened, and this isn't genetic modification, by the way, is that there are certain species of algae that actually do make DHA. And certain big companies have exploited that and have farmed these specific algae to produce DHA. So you can go into a health food shop and get a vegan DHA. It's the same thing, so it's just as good. So I know a lot of vegans who actually sort of cross the line and they will supplement fish oils, but they don't want to eat fish, which is also fine. So you can do it vegan, but you're in slightly muddy waters because I don't want to give the impression that fish is just omega-3. It's a lot more than that. It's got things called phospholipids, also rich in eggs, and it's got vitamin D, and it's got B12, and it's got minerals like selenium, zinc, and so on. So you get a lot more in a piece of fish than you do in just an omega-3 fish oil. And really, we could not have become human without a diet that was both marine food and plant food. There is no way we could have gone from the brain size of a chimp, which is 350 grams, which has stayed the same 6.5 million years ago, to a peak of close to 1,700 grams, about 20,000-30,000 years ago. And this is all done on skull size. So you look at Homo sapiens skull size. And the shocker, John, is that today the average brain size is 1,330 grams. So we have lost 20% of our brain size in the last 20,000 years. And it probably is around the time that we moved into agriculture. And we stopped being, if you like, hunter-gatherers along the estuaries, the coast, the rivers, and so on, which of course is the easiest food. I mean, you don't have to go hunting for animals when, you know, population is very small. I mean, where you're up in Scotland or where I am down in Wales, I mean, you just walk along your estuaries and they'd be full of mussels and oysters and crabs, and the rock pools would catch little fish. I mean, you literally scoop them up and eat them. You don't need to go hunting for deer, which have a terribly annoying habit of running away when you get close.
So much more I want to talk about on that, but let's go on to B vitamins if we can, please, because I want to do a bit of a pre-say first of all.
Yeah, I mean, a very good context for this is that actually what your brain is made out of is these omega-3 DHA, which is bound to something called the phospholipid. And if we call
This is the fatty bit, the fatty cell membrane, really, isn't it?
yeah, that's what the membrane is made out of. That's what all the talking in your brain is happening through this membrane. And the phospholipid holds the DHA in place. And so the phospholipid is like a nail, and the DHA is like the wood, the timber. But the putting of those two together requires a process called methylation, which is to do with B vitamins. Now, the real big breakthrough was back in the early 2000s. Professor David Smith, who was the second in charge at Oxford Medical School, professor of pharmacology, I mean, literally the man who made Oxford one of the leading pharmacology departments in the world. They had found out what Alzheimer's was, which was a degeneration of the central part of the brain. They had developed a brain scan for it, which is now used globally to diagnose Alzheimer's. So these are the top scientists. They found a high level of something called homocysteine, in Alzheimer's brains. And homocysteine is only produced in the body if you lack B vitamins. So it's a measure of dysfunction in relation to B vitamins.
So it's a measure of vitamin B deficiency, really,
It is
isn't it?
really, it's a functional measure, B6, B12, and folate, because we have a billion methylation reactions every 2 seconds. It's how the body works. Like we've heard about genes, they're not set in stone. You can upregulate, downregulate, dim, switch up. It's why half of women with the BRCA gene get breast cancer, the other half don't. You can manipulate genes through epigenetics, the environment. That's done by methylation. And methylation depends on B6, B12, folate. So if you're not doing methylation, your homocysteine is high, you definitely are not getting enough B vitamins for you. So what he then did was to take a group of almost 300 people with pre-dementia, which we call mild cognitive impairment, give half of them B vitamins, half of them placebo, measure the rate of brain shrinkage over the following year. And the first thing he found in the placebo group is the higher the homocysteine, the greater was the rate of brain shrinkage. So homocysteine predicts the rate at which your brain will shrink, which is what dementia is. In the half that got the B vitamins, it less than or more than halved the rate of brain shrinkage, which is a phenomenal result and best study, no criticism, perfect study. But then a few years later, and I'll tell you my conversation with him in a minute because it's critical on how we prevent Alzheimer's. A few years later, they were thinking about the importance of omega-3 and went back to the original blood samples and split the group into the third who had the lowest omega-3 in their blood and the third who had the highest. Didn't give omega-3. And what they found was the B vitamins had no beneficial effect at all in the third with the low omega-3. But in the third with a high omega-3, they got 73% less brain shrinkage, and a third ended the year with no clinical dementia rating. In other words, the brain shrinkage fell to that you see in normal older people who have no cognitive decline, and 30% of them had no clinical dementia rating. In other words, they could not be diagnosed with dementia. And what really annoys me is we see charities out there saying we exist for a cure. And a cure is defined as no more abnormal brain shrinkage and no more symptoms. And that's exactly what they showed. And to put it into context, the latest anti-amyloid drug that hit the front pages, the beginning of the end of Alzheimer's, the breakthrough we've been waiting for, and all that other hyperbole, actually produced 20% increased brain shrinkage in the drug group versus placebo. And I'm telling you here in immaculate study, 73% less brain shrinkage in the same period of time using the same measures exactly.
I think I can work this one out myself. It must be simple. You have to give the vitamin Bs and the omega 3s together.
Exactly. And there have been four studies now. Like what happened in Sweden? They've given a whole lot of omega-3 to people with Alzheimer's, didn't work. So they went back to their blood samples split them into thirds and found the third with the lowest homocysteine, above 10 you have brain shrinkage, or 11. And by the way, that's half of everyone over 65. So I'm 66, most people my age have a level of homocysteine which is already causing brain shrinkage. They may not yet have cognitive decline, but they are actually declining behind the scenes. That's the point. And anyway, in the Swedish study, they found the same thing. High homocysteine, no benefit of omega-3. Low homocysteine, a massive benefit. And that's been replicated in Holland, in Sweden, in China, and the UK. So we now have a 100%, this is quite rare in science. There are some studies on omega-3 that haven't worked. There are some studies on B vitamins that haven't worked, but there is not a single study factoring in both that haven't produced a very, very large, statistically significant effect.
It's really strange. I can sit here in my back room and I seem to have worked it out, but all these brilliant scientists in the pharmaceutical industry don't seem to have realized. It's really, really very strange. But
here's the other weird thing.
Probably save that for another video.
Well, yeah, I mean, here's the weird thing, because, you know, we're men of science, so we look at the studies, and what we like, ideally, is meta-analyses of randomized controlled trials. So I'm looking for the best systematic review, meta-analysis, which was done in China by a man called Professor Jintai Yu, who heads the Institute of Neurology at Fudan University, which is a bit like Oxford University for China. And it was 396 studies, 156 randomized controlled trials, and it grades all the prevention factors. And number one, I mean, literally number one, level A evidence, it says the most promising treatment is homocysteine lowering with B vitamins. And then I go to the National Institute of Health, which is the US, you know, top place, and they did a review, and it's called the population attributable risk. What percentage of the risk is attributed to whatever? 22% was to B vitamins, homocysteine, and 22% to seafood, omega-3. And that was before they knew about the combination.
Yeah.
So, you know, if the DHA is the timber and the phospholipid is the nail, the B vitamins are the hammer. And if you get all those right, we haven't spoken about sugar yet, you have already, at the very least, cut your risk by a third.
Amazing. Let's go on to, I do want to come back to these things, but for now, let's go on to sugars, please.
Well, in a sense, what we've been talking about here is the structure of your brain. And you've got to understand that you are the architect of your own brain, and what you take in literally changes the structure of your brain. But then those brain cells, they got to work. And to work, they need fuel. And fuel is either glucose or ketones. The brain cells are so tightly packed together, they have to have five-star fuel. Muscle cells can burn fatty acids. Brain cells can't. They have to have either pure glucose or pure ketones, which are not fat, not protein, not carbohydrate. They're ketones. They're a fuel, and they're made in the liver from fat. And the interesting thing is, if you give a neuron, a brain cell, the choice, they slightly prefer ketones, so they will run on either. And by the way, since we were getting a little bit Arctic earlier on, you know, with the whales and the Eskimos, an emperor penguin will sit up there and somewhere on the ice for 3 months, not eating, turning their body fat into ketones in the liver to power their brain. So if we fast, we make ketones. Some people do a ketogenic diet where they have no carbohydrates. So here is the sort of irony. If you eat too much sugar year on year on year, you make more and more insulin, because insulin is the hormone that sends the sugar into your brain cells. It's a transporter. And as soon as you have more sugar than you need, the insulin will store the excess as fat. So we call insulin the fat storing hormone. And the more insulin you make, the more deaf you become to it. It's a bit like if you listen to heavy metal all the time, you get deaf and you have to turn the volume up. So you make even more insulin, and that is called insulin resistance. So eventually the effect of eating too much sugar is your brain cells are starved of glucose. They're starved of sugar. they're actually sugar deprived, that's what happens. And then you get a sort of energy gap. And this is experienced as brain fog. You know, I can't concentrate, can't quite remember that person's name, can't remember where my keys are, and so on. And one of our scientists, a brilliant man, Professor Stephen Kinane from Canada, he did a very simple thing, because we've learned something really interesting. You hear a lot of sort of lyrical talk about coconut oil. And it turns out that within coconut oil, there is a type of fat, which I'll just call C8, because that's it's caprylic acid, triglyceride, whatever, but it's 8 carbons, called C8. And that is what we make ketones from. So we, and Stephen Kinane, have been taking the C8 out of coconut oil, and it becomes a sort of very, very light, clear oil. You know, it's sort of watery but oily, tasteless, tiny hint of coconut. And he gave people with pre-dementia 2 tablespoons and measured energy in their brain, and their brains came back to life. I mean, literally, they were making 230% more energy from ketones than before. Didn't change the glucose. It's a bit like your brain cells are like a hybrid car. They can run on petrol or electric, and the petrol engine, the sugar engine, is all gunked up, can't work, and then you deliver some electricity and they come back to life. So he was able to improve people's cognition, improve their brain energy by filling the energy gap with a couple of tablespoons of this CA oil. So, you know, this is the fuel supply. And, you know, some people, not wrongly, but a bit, you know, monopolar, say, isn't dementia just type 3 diabetes? And the answer is, you can definitely get dementia because you have a blood sugar problem, and the risk if you're diabetic is much, much higher. But it's not the only thing. That's the fuel supply. And of course, whenever the brain is making so much energy, I mean, in babies, by the way, it's 75% of all the energy is happening in the brain. And whenever you're burning sugar for fuel, for energy, you make oxidants. They're like the exhaust fumes. And therefore, the brain is exquisitely in need of antioxidants, which, by the way, is the fourth horseman. But that's why smoking increases risk, pollution increases risk. Very interesting new study that pollution increases risk for dementia, but not if your homocysteine is low. Because if your homocysteine is low, you've got enough B vitamins, you can do methylation, and methylation is how we detoxify. So what we're starting to do, which of course is very anti, you know, conventional reduction science, you know, which says I've got, you know, one drug that has one effect and that's what you must do, is we're starting to learn, surprise, surprise, that the brain fats, omega-3, also vitamin D, we haven't spoken about that, and the B vitamins, and the sugar, and the fruit and veg, and antioxidants, they all have an effect. And when you sort of reverse engineer all this, you get to the point where we realize the modern man is doing exactly what is necessary to completely mess up their brain health.
Mm-hmm. So it's actually the insulin resistance that's the problem.
Yes.
Depriving the brain cells of.
Yes.
Glucose, it's the issue.
Yeah, the interesting thing is that when you start to, you know, go a bit more ketogenic, like Nodge, the guy I mentioned earlier, he takes 2 tablespoons of CA oil every day. It's a little bit like putting your car in for a service, in the sense that it repairs, so it reverses insulin resistance. So if you give your sugar engine a break for a period of time, it can actually reverse insulin resistance. I mean, I got slaughtered back in whenever it was, the 1990s, when I went on TV and said type 2 diabetes is reversible. And actually on primetime TV, they gave me a diabetic. I said I need 6 weeks. And at the end of 6 weeks, they didn't have diabetes. So the point is, it is reversible. Sadly, Alzheimer's, while I've already given you a case of someone getting better, truly Alzheimer's is holes in the brain. So, you know,
yeah, I mean, I learned it was a progressive irreversible impairment of intellectual function when I was 18.
I think when you get the holes in the brain, I mean, people don't realize this. Office of National Statistics in the UK, 2022, it's the number one killer. It's the number one fear. It's the number one health cost. And actually, these brain disorders cost more than all of cancer and heart disease combined. And a study in April in the Lancet Neurology said 43% of the world's population, 3.4 billion people, have disability due to brain neurological diseases. So it's like right up there. And we know that this massive escalation, we've seen a fourfold increase in autism, for example, in the last, you know, decade or so. It's not genes, you know, because the genes are the same. It has to be environment. And of course, the most direct environment that we have control over is what we put in our mouth.
Yep. Amazing. More to do on that as well. Let's go on to antioxidants, Patrick, please.
Yeah. So here you imagine your brain is generating all this energy, it's making all these exhaust fumes, and it's those oxidants that age us. And that is why, you know, with all our wonderful good practices, John, our age is, our skin is not quite, you know, as, you know, as it used to be. You know, these things happen. So oxidation is a reality. And I mean, what I started to realize, and this maybe sort of shows you the importance of it, is that in order to burn glucose, you have to generate oxidants, and they kill you in the end. Vitamin C, ascorbic acid, is four steps away from glucose. Every single animal, with very, very few exceptions, and we are one of them, makes vitamin C. Every single plant, with no exception, makes vitamin C from fructose. Glucose for the animals, fructose for the plants. So, in other words, I believe that we could never have become an oxygen-based life form generating energy from glucose without simultaneously having vitamin C as an antioxidant. Now, we'll come on to why we don't make it perhaps in a minute, but the point is when you eat fruits, when you eat vegetables, all those brightly colored foods, you're getting antioxidants. And in studies where they add up the total antioxidant intake of people, those in the top third of antioxidant intake, herbs, spices, fruits, veg, and so on, halve their risk of dementia. So we spoke about structure, B vitamins, omegas, phospholipids. Now we've got function, sugar and ketones. Now we've got the protection, and obviously smoking is a, you know, a trillion oxidants with every puff of cigarette smoke, major risk factor. So when you get all those antioxidants in, it makes a phenomenal difference. So that's the fourth vitamin, really.
Vitamin C and eat a rainbow.
Yeah, vitamin C and eat a rainbow. And I would say vitamin C supplements for the very simple reason that we just don't make it. Primates have lost the ability to make vitamin C, as has the guinea pig, which is why the guinea pig is the experimental animal of choice. It has the same defect as us.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And then the other species that don't make it are bats. And someone asked me a very good question the other day. It's rare we get good questions, but the question was, if bats don't make vitamin C, why aren't they, you know, dying from COVID, you know? And the answer is that they're the only flying mammal. And when they fly, their heart rate goes up to 1,000 beats a minute. Their temperature can increase by up to 2 degrees. And it's basically interval training. They have such a strong cardiovascular respiratory system that just respiratory cold, you know, no big deal. So bats can carry it, but they can't die from it. And a lovely example of this, not far from you in Newcastle a few months ago, was a study that found that cats got the same variant of COVID as their owners. None of them died because they make vitamin C. You know, so Linus Pauling, who was actually, you know, two Nobel Prizes, 48 PhDs, genius chemist. I mean, when Einstein was asked, are you a genius? He said, if you want a genius, it's Linus Pauling. And it was Linus Pauling who was the patron of my Institute for Optimum Nutrition, which started the whole profession of nutritional therapy. He did something incredibly obvious. He said, if animals don't get, you know, who make vitamin C are really very immune to viruses and cancer, and heart disease, he said, how much vitamin C does a goat make, you know, when exposed to a virus or a cow or a dog, or whatever? And he worked out that we would have to supplement a gram, which is about 22 supermarket oranges, an hour, to get the blood level to the same as an animal who is exposed to a virus. So that was his logic and his thinking, and we do know that it's incredibly effective. So the long and short of that story is that I want to eat my fruit and veg and herbs and spices. Oregano is really good. I grow it. I eat blueberries and all that sort of stuff. But I can't get enough vitamin C because I'm actually part of those species that lost the ability to make it. So I'm going to supplement 1 or 2 grams a day. And a gorilla will eat 4.5 grams a day, and every monkey will eat about 2 grams a day in their tropical jungle environment. But unfortunately, in Wales, we don't have a tropical jungle. So I'm going to supplement it.
Just say something about vitamin.
It's good studies on vitamin C supplementation lowering dementia.
Yeah. Just say something about vitamin D, Patrick, please.
Well, if your vitamin D level is low, you increase your risk of cognitive decline by 17 times. And if it's high, you reduce your risk of Alzheimer's by 4 times. And in studies where people supplement vitamin C, those who supplement versus not.
Vitamin D. Yeah.
And reduce their risk by a third. And actually, these were sort of medical studies where they were giving people, I mean, we don't know the exact dose because it was sort of pooling it, but probably 3,000 units a day. So you know, it's the amount that you and I, if we study the science, will say what we need in the winter. Because something very simple, which many people don't know, is as soon as your shadow is longer than the length of your body, the angle of the sun is insufficient for you to produce vitamin D from the action of sunlight on cholesterol in the skin. So I got busted actually 10 years ago by the Advertising Standards Agency for a campaign I ran saying everyone in the winter must supplement vitamin D. And they have a rule, number 4 or something, which says you cannot imply that you can't get all the nutrients you need from a well-balanced diet. You know, it's the biggest lie in nutrition. Anyway, I got busted. And then when the government finally announced we have to supplement vitamin D in the winter, I felt like reporting them to the ASA, but I thought, you know, better to light a candle than rage against the darkness.
Which, of course, is the government guideline now, even though we could debate about the remarkably small dose that they are advising.
And their ineffectiveness, because only 4% of people actually take it. So one of the things I'm interested in this project we're doing at Food for the Brain, Citizen Science, is it's one thing knowing, I mean, you can basically dementia proof yourself. That's the bottom line. We know how to do it. So the big question is, how do you motivate people to actually make the changes? The government's ads on vitamin D are not very effective. Only 4% of people are doing it. So even if they wanted to do prevention, which they're not even on that page yet, they wouldn't know how to do it. And that's what we're specializing in, how to get to people, motivate them to make the changes that make a difference.
Now, I have done your test, Patrick, and I must say it's excellent. And the software that goes with it is truly impressive. So we encourage people to do this. It is completely free. Here is mine that I show some embarrassment to myself.
Yeah, let's see how you scored.
So I just logged in and did the test. Now, to be fair, you've got to give it probably a good half hour, and you've got to really focus. It's not something you do casually. You've got to give it 100% of your time to get a cognitive assessment.
Turn your phone off, get the cat out the room.
Yep. And it's got to be 100% of your time, but well worth it, because here is mine. That was my first test there. And I'm afraid I'm kind of not quite as green as I'd like to be.
Yeah, Patrick. So this cognitive function test is the actual, it's not a questionnaire, it's an interactive test. You can't do well on it by cheating. You can do badly because you were blind drunk or, you know, you answered the phone, but you cannot do better. So you know, that is it. And as you can see, we want you, John, in the green. And you're in the sort of, you know, beginning of yellow. You're not in the red. So if you went for and this, by the way, is the digital version of what you do at a memory clinic, if referred for, you know, concerns about dementia. And if you did it there, they'd say you're fine, because basically, you know, in medical language, you're either sick or you're fine. They say you're fine, but actually you're drifting in the wrong direction. So we need to do something about this.
Are these, I mean, I've chosen to reveal mine to anyone who chooses to watch, Patrick, but normally would this be completely confidential?
It is completely confidential, and we've tested 430,000, I think actually 440,000 now, because literally
Wow.
8,000 people will have, or 7,000 will have done it this month. It's the minute you enter your details, it's anonymized. So behind the scenes, you are a number.
Yeah.
Your data, your information isn't sold to anyone. Your name is not attached to it. So you really don't need to have those fears. And what's
And all I had to put in was my name and my email. I don't think I had to put in anything else in. I
You
think
do
that was
have to
it.
select the area where you're in,
Right.
geographically. And what is
Yeah.
really amazing, and I kind of want to emphasize this, is that you've now become a citizen scientist in the sense that you've shared your
Yes.
data
Yeah.
anonymously. And
Yeah.
with hundreds of thousands of people, and we hope to reach 1 million by the end of next year, we can actually really look at what combination of behaviors, because the next part of this test is actually the questionnaire. So this is the yardstick. It says your cognitive function is here.
Yes,
Then,
and I'm afraid
yeah,
mine
your
is
dementia
not
is
quite where I'd
index
like to.
is based
Yeah.
on a questionnaire where if you're doing
Yeah.
everything wrong, you smoke, you don't supplement vitamin D or vitamin C, you don't exercise, you don't eat fruit and veg and so on, your score is 100%. That is your
Yeah.
future risk, if you like. And if you're doing everything right, your score is 0%. And the most
Yeah.
important thing is that this part is totally under your control. So by changing what you eat and how you behave, you can drive it down, and you're sort of in the mid zone, which is
Yeah.
not great, but it's sort of good in a way, because the fact that your actual cognition is not perfect, if it was like that and you were perfect on your behaviors, then what do you do? But the reality is you've got loads of room for improvement in your behaviors. And then,
And it breaks it down really nicely, doesn't it, here?
I mean, you can be red, orange, yellow, or green, and you've got no reds. So in other words,
Yeah.
there are no zones where you're really, really, really doing badly.
Yeah.
You've just got a number of yellows which you can turn green. So it means a bit less sugar, that's on the low carbs and GL, a bit more brain fats.
Yeah.
Maybe we have a blood test we'll tell you about so we can find out whether it is omega-3 or vitamin D or whatever. B
Yeah.
vitamins, again, we have a very cool blood test to find out your homocysteine level. You may need a bit. A lot of older people don't absorb B12 well. It's not necessarily their eating, it's their absorbing. Antioxidants, you're in the right direction, but room for improvement. Healthy gut is fine. Bit more activity physically. It's hard to believe that your mind is not, completely, totally active, but I don't know. And then there's sleep and calm. So sleep is
Yeah.
how we repair the brain. Calm relates to
Yeah.
stress. So little tweaks, really. I mean, you should be able within 3 months, I would say, to get everything into the green, and then your dementia risk index will drop
Yeah.
from 57 down to under 30%. And then
And you have to be
basically,
completely honest, completely honest. Well, I was maybe a little hard on myself, but you have to be completely honest when you fill this out. Otherwise, there's no point.
And I mean, the point is that if you get your score down, we have a graph. I won't show you now, but it shows the gradual, and this is an extraordinary thing that no one knows, the descent of cognitive function in relation to age of all the people who've done it. And it's actually dropping every year from the age of 18. But it's only in most people when they get to like 80, they're hitting the danger zone in terms of cognitive function. So the point is, this isn't something you only do when you're 60 like us. You'll still get your cognition will be in the green, I'm sure, if you're 20, but you may still be doing the behaviors. Now, what we found is the people who score in the green for dementia risk index, in other words, are doing most things right, their cognitive function still declines with age, but it starts at such a higher place that it predicts they will get Alzheimer's when they're about 290.
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
in
I'd like to push it a little beyond 290, but I would accept that.
So the point is, if we
Yeah.
move your line up, so to speak,
Yeah.
you get to the point where you are dementia-proofed.
Yeah.
And that's the
And
point.
it's important to stress all this is completely free and it's great citizen science and nearly 500,000 people have done it. It's
It's cool, isn't it?
dude, it really is seriously cool and it's just brilliant. So like if you click on low carbs there, it gives you, My computer, yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
It actually tells you, it gives you
Yeah.
individualized information as to how to get your act together.
For full disclosure, there are two things that you have to pay for if you choose to. And this
Yeah.
is really the second part. Because the first part in our research, which is headed by a brilliant neuroscientist, Dr. Tommy Wood, assistant professor at University of Washington, is we can now really, really, really start to look at what combination of behaviors are most protective and most harmful. It's the sort of what. But the next thing is, you've done this, which is great. Now, how do
This
I
is
know
the
you're
this.
going? How do I know you're going to change your behaviors? So the how, we've employed a brilliant woman, Dr. Christina Curtis, who runs the Applied Behavior Change Unit, originally from UCL. If you pay £50 a year, you can join something called Cognition, which then emails you things to read, things to watch, things to do. There are Zoom groups to join. So you click on a domain, maybe sugar, and you kind of know, I'm not saying you, but one might know is a bit of a problem, but you crave sugar. And you now go through a month's worth of education, Zoom groups, encouragements, et cetera, to change that. And at the end of the month, you rescore just that part of the questionnaire, and hopefully you've gone from red to green. And then you pick the next one, and the next one, and the next one. So our sort of major investment now is how to not just, know the what, but actually we consider ourselves successful when we're able to change people's behavior. And that costs money. I mean, it costs money because we're investing in, real experts and research, and it's £50 a year, and some people do it. And the other thing that costs, if you choose to do it, which is exactly what you're showing, is we've developed now a test. It's called Drift, and it's a pinprick blood test. So you literally you buy the kit. It's £179, a bit less if you choose to do it every 6 months, and it will measure your homocysteine, that's the B vitamins. It will measure the omega-3 and the vitamin D, that's the brain fats, and it will measure what's called HbA1c or sugar-coated red blood cells, glycosylated hemoglobin. Is literally counting the percentage of damaged red blood cells, which is what doctors use to diagnose diabetes. So now you say, well, if you say to me, should I supplement B vitamins? Am I eating enough, fruit and veg, or should I have less sugar? I said, don't ask me, ask your body. And the blood test shows you. And then, I mean, to give you an example, and I'm sure she won't mind me saying this, but my wife and I were in our 60s. I mean, this is all very recent. In December, we finally, working with a genius team of clinical laboratory people, found a way to measure homocysteine inexpensively and accurately, because it's actually quite a difficult test. And immediately, my wife and I send in our, pinprick blood test. You can, by the way, you can just get the homocysteine test if that's all you want to know about. And by the way, homocysteine predicts 100 diseases. 100.
Yes, it's not just dementia. This is a whole range of things.
Absolutely.
High blood pressure, heart disease,
Yeah.
arterial
And
disease.
just as a slight aside, well, I'm not going to get pregnant anyway, but I would recommend someone to not get pregnant unless their homocysteine is below 7. And to give you an example of that, in a study of healthy women whose homocysteine was above 9, at the age of 6, their children were significantly more socially withdrawn, anxious, depressed, had various problems. So the reason women are told to take folic acid in pregnancy is very simply to lower homocysteine, improve methylation, and improve the brain development. So it's very important. So my wife and I, we prick our fingers, it's very painless and simple, send it in. My score is 7, which is great. Hers was 15. So she's in the brain shrinking zone, unknowingly, and she takes a multi every day. And eats good food. I mean, we eat pretty much the same food. And that really woke her up. So she started to take a homocysteine lowering B vitamin, which, by the way, the difference between that and a B complex or a multivitamin is a B complex may give you 10 microgram of B12. The RDA, which I call the ridiculous dietary arbitrary, is 2.5 microgram. But the homocysteine lowering B formula is 500 microgram, not because we need that much in our blood, but because many people later in life absorb B12 less well. And the nice thing about B12, I mean, that's why some people have injections of B12 to bypass the stomach, is that it's very cheap, It's non-toxic. It really doesn't matter how much you have. But what we've learned is that if you supplement a lot more, 500 micrograms, that's what Professor David Smith used in his study, brings the homocysteine down. So 2 months later, my wife retests and her score is 8. So a 10p a day vitamin pill has brought her brain out of the brain shrinking zone into plenty of resilience. It's as simple as that. And that, literally that, for some people, is what's the determinant of whether they will or won't get Alzheimer's.
Yep, amazing stuff. Yeah, so do the cognitive function test completely free, get your score, be honest when you fill out the questionnaire, be a citizen scientist. And there's so much more to talk about on this, Patrick, but I'm just going to leave that there as an introductory appetizer and a lot more to process. But for now, thank you very much indeed.
And thank you for helping spread the word.